Thank you guys for the wonderful, for holding the forte for me last weekend. I'm back. I'm not back well, but at least I'm back. I'm not dead. Guys, COVID is real. Take care of yourself. I don't die young. My name is Adeja Adebo Ale, and it's still the best sporting show in the whole of the universe. It's still new seasons of sports. Hearing on a band radio scope on our YouTube channel and all the podcasts that you can think of, Apple Podcasts and of course Spotify. I have the gang with me today. I got Olaale with me. I have Orokuka G. Now, of course, I have Olainga with me today. Olaale, you want to go first?
Yeah. So good day to sporting fans around the world. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys will have a nice time with us today.
Yeah, of course. Catch you.
Sports fans, always a pleasure to have you join us. Glad to see Debo back taking his rightful position as the host. On the weekend when the stubborn Serbian was finally booted out of Australia, the NFL playoffs also begin. So many things to unwrap. Stay tuned for a packing show.
All right, perfect. And of course, Bolainka.
Hi, sporting fans. It's great to be here once again. The traitor Benitez finally booted out of Everton.
Come on, man. You got to do that.
It was long time coming. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much, Laika. Good. The Reds showing the Blues how it should be done. Of course, we'll start with the non-footballing sport, which we call the best of the rest. Where do we start from? I think talking about the NFL right now, I think it's going to be only justifiable putting out the wrong news and trying to correct the notion at the same time. We talked about Davis a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if Bukachi and Mulawali did mention it last week. This young guy took off his guard, left the pitch to say he's not playing for the Tampa Buccaneers, and everybody felt, because he's a temperamental guy, he's a city guy, he's our fourth. Things came out afterwards to show the poor guy is actually not our fourth. This is a guy that was injured, has been playing under bout of injections. The coach knows about it. And they had a documentary evidence through a text message to show that, hey, I'm not feeling too good for this game. And it was being forced. And this could actually have ended his career if he had kept playing with it. Kachi, I know, I'm not sure. I apologize if you've spoken about this before. But if you haven't, I want you to shed a little bit of light on it quickly before we move to.
So we didn't touch on it last week because I personally felt that Antonio Brown does not really deserve the attention he's getting in the news. He has a history of unraveling. And I feel this was another case of him unraveling. The NFL is a very, very physical sport, probably more physical or even as close as in physicality to boxing. Almost everybody plays with some kind of injury or the likes. I feel that Antonio Brown only went through the injury route because he was trying to draw sympathy to his cause. But I don't think he would deserve or earn any sympathy from me. We all know he was only doing it because he wanted to get his play incentives. He was not getting the ball from Tom Brady, and he went and threw a tantrum, which only prima donnas do. And you begin to ask yourself, why should a player who arguably was one of the best receivers in the last 10 years in the NFL be playing for incentives? Well, for our listeners who don't know, that's because he threw a tantrum when he was with the Oakland Raiders and left more than $35 million guaranteed money on the table. Here, coming to Tampa Bay to play for a $1 million incentive. I think he cost himself a chance to be in the Football Hall of Fame. So I want to give the Tampa Bay Buccaneers the benefit of the doubt because he is not the only one who was playing through injury. Antonio Brown should stick to rapping. We saw videos of him hanging out with Kanye West during the week. Let's see if he can make money from his rapping career. But I think his footballing career is over.
All right, perfect. I totally disagree with your country. Anyways, I strongly feel sometimes coaches, because of their own. We've seen it in football. We've seen it with Mourinho doing the same thing with Eden Hazard. And everybody know where Hazard is at right now. Playing.
Can I just say something before we move on?
Even if
Antonio was right, the way he went about it was wrong. 100%. Two wrongs will never make it right.
Yeah,
and because of his past history, even if he was right, people will not listen to him. He has lost all the capitals he has. I'm talking of the intangible capitals he has. Right, he doesn't have it anymore. I can't stand up for him. It will be very, very against my
beliefs. And just to add to what Kachi just said, someone wrote that Antonio Brown's entire life he spent trying to take back things he said. That's not a not a good report. That's not a good report.
All right.
He's a free agent and it will be okay.
It will be okay. But like Kachi said, nobody wants to touch him. All right, perfect. All right. And from there we'll drive straight to Melbourne. What we have, we had a political fiasco, if you ask me. I don't know, a political fiasco, stupidity on the part of the athlete, and of course, a show of power on the part of the authorities. For guys, I just go back. I'm double jabbed. I had COVID last week. That's why I could not be on the show. And Novo Djokovic doing what he did. For me, I'll say it's within his right, but there's always a limit to your right if he's been abused. Olali, they've seen the end of Novak right now. They've seen his end at least. For the next 3 years, he's not going to be able to return to Australia. So probably would not be able to add his best tournament to his call of fame. Or call of honor when that time comes. Do you think this is both a political show and lack of sensitivity or lack of sense on the part of Novak, or a combination of both? Or how do you see it?
Yeah. Now let me start by saying this. For somebody, if you are from let me say from this part of the world. West Africa, Sub-Saharan Africa, most especially, you know one thing very right. You don't fuck with the
government. Oh, man, you can't say that on the radio. Come on, man.
You don't joke with the government.
Yeah, sure.
You don't joke with the government. That will cost you a lot.
Yeah.
No matter how clean you are, not talk of when you have a lot against you. I think it was a matter of Novak being insensitive. Yes, you have your own personal police, like personal belief, but you know there's something in life when you might not believe in something, but at times you don't have to rub it on the people's face. Yeah, I think that was the reason why this could have been something a lot of people could have let it go, but because of the way Novak has probably handled himself, like I keep going back to Kyrie. No matter how whatever we hold against him, you need to give it to him. He made up his mind on what he wants to do, and he understands the consequence of his decision. And the man stood back and he just stayed on his own without any controversy, without trying to use one back door.
To achieve, you
understand. So I think it's unfortunate because my major issue with this whole thing is it might comes down in history, like what if Novak played in those three Australian Open
tournaments,
and that is
make it four.
That would be the most painful thing. What if he played? We don't know whether it could have been. You could have probably hold the record of the highest number of Grand Slam of all time. It's very unfortunate. It ended the way it should. It should never. I think diplomacy could have been
the best way out of it,
and which I think it should have started working on that 2-3 months before this tournament. Not trying to play on people's intelligence. If you think you have, you are within the law to do some things. My guy, a country or a considered authority, they will bring another law tomorrow just to make sure that whatever you think you have, so you don't fight the authority. It's never done. It will end the way it has ended.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that. Malanika, I'm going to come to you now. Sometimes when you are within your rights, you feel you are within your rights and you stand by it. But there's a popular saying in law, evil wants equity, must come with clean hands. Novak hands were definitely stained. He had COVID like a week before the tournament. Otherwise, it could have been a different story if he didn't have COVID. But he lied on his application. And he came out after he won the first court case. You know, how much of bad advice should we boil down to this? This guy is not a controversial athlete. He's not a Balotelli. You know, yeah, that's the truth. He's not, what's this Australian guy? The guy that always makes throw tantrums. I forgot
his name. Nick.
He's not Nick. If it's Nick, we'll know. Nick can't see anything in this world, you know. Should we give, should at this point, should we, I'm not the biggest Novak fan, but at least, should we forgive Novak for what he did, given his history? History always judges us one way or the other, negatively or positively. This is just a mistake. I think it boils down to wrong advices. But I stand to be corrected.
Yeah, Debo, no doubt about it. It was a fiasco for Novak. And the fact that he has been touted by many people to be the GOAT or GOAT to be, the greatest of all time to be in tennis, this scenario has not added any value to his reputation. On the contrary, it has tainted it. Yes. He has his policy. We're all principled in one way or the other. But at the same time, I don't want to think that he alone is to be blamed or he had the final impute, the only impute on his decision to go to Australia. Obviously, when you look at the economic, when you look at it from an economic perspective, the organizers of the competition, they would have known, they know his stance, right? And they would have known the impact of Novak not playing. They'll know the reduction in maybe viewership. They probably were thinking of that, and they probably thought they could allow Novak to get away with the fact that he was about to do what normally is not done. Yeah. Again, look at the state government in quotes, maybe the Melbourne state government. I mean, they obviously knew that Novak was coming to play tennis. He wasn't coming to sell suya or something. So obviously, yeah. So they should have known in the first place. Why allow him to enter when you know that he's in a position whereby he might decide to break a federal government law? So I think it's a lot of people need to be blamed for this. Lack of communication between the state government and the federal government of Australia, as it were. And the fact that Novak, I mean, is someone that we all respect a lot. I particularly respect him. And not only is this going to jeopardize his reputation, obviously, he cannot win his 21st Grand Slam at the Australia Open right now. What is going to happen in Wimbledon? What is going to happen at the French Open? What is going to happen at the
US Open? I can tell you what will happen. He's not going to play.
And if eventually, is he going to be banned for 3 years? When you have 3 years to 34, that's 37. Can he actually go on to win more titles at that age? More Australian titles at that age?
Not just Australia. Not just Australia. Kasia, I'm going to come to you now. The Flesh and Murders, is in New York, right? It's in New York City, right?
Correct.
And if you're not jabbed in New York, so we'll probably not see him at the US Open as well, at the Flesh and Murders. Do you think it's about time that the jab is not going to quit? It's not going to kill you. It's not going to kill you. That's the truth.
The truth is,
it's a principle on his side. But do you think it's about time he bent that principle for his overall his own overall good and his legacy?
I don't think so. I don't think any man should be forced into doing what he or she does not believe in strongly, or and doing anything that stands against their beliefs and their values. The same way our God and Creator gave man free will to exercise in choosing whether to serve him or not. I think Novak Djokovic should have the right to exercise or decide whether he wants to take the jab or not. Until it becomes, maybe in his country or globally, it becomes mandatory to take it, to do certain things, right? Olawale mentioned it that Kyrie Irving is a good example of someone who did not take the jab and did not just constitute a nuisance by, you know, looking for legal windows or legal backdoors to buttress his stance. I think while Novak should not be the only one to blame for this, he shouldn't be the only one. However, the bulk of the blame, the whole drama started because of Novak's stubbornness and the kind of advice he got. So I don't think Novak should go ahead and do the job. The French Open organizer have already told him, you don't need to be double vaxxed or even collect one jab to play in our tournament. So he still has windows. Yes, it's not the strongest circuit or strongest surface, but he won it at some point. He's won it at some point.
Of course. Of
so he still has opportunities twice if I'm to win it. Exactly. And let's not even assume that because he's not playing here, this is an automatic win for Rafa Nadal. Currently in the Melbourne tournament ongoing, Andy Murray is resurrecting his career. He played in the finals. I don't know if the result is out yet, but he's playing in the final of the Melbourne Open. That's the tune-up tournament before the Australian Open. And as Novak ages, so also is Nadal aging. It's possible that 21 may not even be attained by either of them. And we see the Alexander Medvedevs of this world coming to be the new kids on the block. So back to your question, I don't think Novak should be forced into doing what he does not believe in. However, I will not absolve him of any fault in all this.
All right, perfect. Novak, we love you if you're in this. But
I want Nadal to win it, obviously. I'm a Nadal fan, even though Novak is a
so if I may
fan.
Just quickly chip in something. An American friend of mine told me that New Yorkers are mandated to take it, but non-New Yorkers are not mandated to take it. So Novak might just play at the US Open.
Okay. All right. We'll wait to see that and how that plays out. And if Serbia are on the good side of United States by that time, maybe it's not going to turn to a political fiasco. Because sometimes you just see these things and you can't rule out politics from it. Olawale, I'm going to come to you now. Since my guy, the point guy, Steph Curry broke the record. They say they are stunned to Russ Westbrook. what exactly is happening with Steph right now? Is this about the rumor of the open marriage with Aisha? Or this is just a ton of events? Okay, you don't know about the open marriage with Aisha. Okay, there's been a rumor that they have an open marriage. And
they should divorce, I think.
No, they should not. No. That's a very lovely, very, very
which one is marriage. Open marriage?
You know, these people can be crazy sometimes. You know,
they can be crazy.
Yeah. So do you think this boils down to the rumor, or just a deep inform? At this point, Steph should be thinking of an injury just for him to rest now that we have Clay back.
Well, I think this is the season is going to be 82 games played. I don't think you expect them to maintain such standard for the whole 82 games. And consider the fact that in the last few games, Clay came back and it's not been that easy to fit him in, which is normal.
Yeah.
They have a team that was really flourishing before he came back. So I just believe it's just one of those deep informed moments that you probably have during the season, which it most likely falls around this time, winter period, January. This thing. So, but for the, but you can never say some. It could be partly some of the personal issues he's having, which is normal. But generally, even the best set of teams in the past
the Golden State Warriors of 2016, 17, or even the Bulls, you have some period whereby you lose like three out of four games. And yeah, I don't think it's a major concern. I just feel like on Saturday, they actually, after that embarrassing loss against the Bucks on Thursday night,
yeah,
on Friday night, they did the same thing to the Chicago Bulls. So, which means, yeah, so that's why I'm not too really concerned. It's just one of those things, yes, at all.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that. Of course, Kachi, I'm going to come to you now. A little bit, please. A little bit fast and fury. Kevin Durant's MCL is going to be out for 4 to 8 weeks. Is it a cause at the beginning right now?
Well, the Brooklyn Nets are very optimistic that this MCL tear would only be for, actually, they said it's a sprain until MRI shows something else. But for now, it's likely out before between 4 to 6 weeks. Like Olawale said, let's give him a good 8 weeks of rest. I think Durant needs it. He's currently leading the league, averaging about 23.1 points per game. He needs to get the rest. The Brooklyn Nets will not fall automatically to the eighth seed and go into the play-in tournament just because it's away for. They will still win some games. Let's not forget they have a very good player in James Harden that would now become the focal point of the attack and can do some good things. But back to your point, I don't think it's a curse. We've said it severally in football, in other sports. Once you tear your ACL, you become susceptible to injuries down the line. We saw it with Didier Drogba. Once it's just something that happens naturally, because as long as you continue to put that force and the torque, the turning on that knee or the ankle or wherever it is, and I'm going to give an analogy for our Nigerian listeners. They say when you buy a Honda from 2005 and older, you should just know that at any point in time, one of the tires can bend. That's basically what is happening. So we should also kind of expect to probably see Klay Thompson suffer a similar incident at some point in his career, but I don't think it's a curse and it will not spell the end of KD.
Not KD. I'm talking about BN right now, the Brooklyn Nets.
It won't spell the end of Brooklyn Nets. It will not also spell the end of KD himself.
Okay. Because we just can't see these three guys playing together, and it's very frustrating.
Okay, if that's what you mean.
That's what I meant actually.
Sorry if I rambled. If that's what you mean, I guess the handwriting is on the wall. The first person that should go should be Kyrie. And I think Kyrie, because if you look at of all three of them, KD and Harden have played more together than Kyrie and Harden or KD. So the only troublemaker you want to let go will probably be Kyrie. But let's see. I think somebody has a 2-on-1 contract and will become an unrestricted free agent at the end of this year. Let's see what that means.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that. And Malanika, I'm gonna come to you now. Francis Ngannou, the Cameroon nightmare. If that's what they call him, I don't know, but I think he's a nightmare. He's been touted to fight Tyson Fury at one point or the other, with millions of dollars on the or pounds on the table as well. But to the UFC, he had a fight later this week against Cyril Gane. How do you think he's going to fare? I think he's going to win anyways.
Yes, well done, Kachi. UFC 270 is going to be a cracker on the 22nd of January. I mean, when you look at the history of Francis Ngannou, he's been there for a while and... He's done his bit. He has beaten people. And you know, to be the UFC every champion right now, in the midst of some really, really big guys out there, it's a big achievement.
Yeah.
And he's such a nice guy because I've listened to a lot of his interviews. He's intelligent, he speaks good, he's a strategist. And he's gonna fight against someone that he respects. They are not friends. He has said this so many times that he is not friends with Cyril Gane, but he respects him. And Cyril Gane is actually the interim champion. So it's going to be like a unification bout to know who the big dog is.
Yeah, the undisputed.
Who the big dog is, the undisputed. And I think Ngannou, I see him going into this fight and taking advantage of his assets. He's a very strong guy. And I see him setting his eyes on bigger things because he has said that after his fight against Cyril Gane, he's no longer going to settle for the $500,000, $600,000
fight.
Purse fees. He believes he deserves better. And I mean, when you see his kind of output, when he's in fight and when he's training, you really think that the guy deserves something
better. Yo, you can't blame him, man. Jake Paul is a comedian. He makes millions fighting comedians.
And if I chip in there, and that's really what's driving that angst in the camp in the midst of Ngannou and the likes. Ngannou is not as marketable as Kamaru Usman or Israel Adesanya, or you know, who can still command deals outside of the octagon. Yes, and Dana White, the president of UFC, for some reason is reminding me of the late the great or the
Don King.
who will give you what you think is good money, but when you see the final numbers of the pay-per-view slots that Don King makes, you realize, oh my lord,
Don
King I just fought for Don King's entertainment. Dana White is now at risk of losing prime talent to what do they call this? They call it exhibition boxing matches because Jake Paul sells at least 500,000 pay-per-view slots as a YouTube entertainer, something that these Octagon fighters cannot command. It's a big deal. UFC should start looking at that. Otherwise, there will be a death of talent in UFC.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that, Kachi. We're going on a quick break right now. And when we come back, we'll be jumping straight into footballing actions. And we're going to be starting with the AFCON, I guess. Or the demise of Rafa Benitez. Don't go anywhere, guys. I'll be right back.
Let's go.
Yo, so we'll start with Rafa Benitez. This is sometimes in the real world, you just say, you know, something's a misfit. Should I say an antagonist of his employment with Everton from day one? And it was more from a sentimental view of his legacy at the right side of Merseyside rather than what he brings. I know Larry would disagree because of two titles that he won with Valencia, but I've never rated him. I keep saying it and I'll repeat it again. It's not because of the injury of Aikiwa in, I don't know what year it was, 2005 or whatever. Rafa would not be a Champions League winner. I keep saying it. It's more of a coincidence and mother luck shining on them on that particular day. So I don't really rate him. Going to, I know you would not agree, but it's just my opinion. And I'm going to Everton where nobody wanted him. He had the same issue at Chelsea. They did not want him at Chelsea as well. He could have gotten that job. He won them the Europa Cup for crying out loud and exhausted their career, their season, one way or the other, getting them back to the Champions League. But nobody wanted him. And it turns out the same way. And that negativity, that bad energy, there's no way it's not going to translate into on-field performances. And indeed, 100 defeats for him against struggling Norwich City. And only one win in the last 13, dropping Everton to a relegation battle, given how much they spent last season. And the kind of this guy came in and literally sent away James Rodriguez. That's probably the only world class player they have in that team.
And also Lucas Digne, he sold him.
You know, Kachi, I'm gonna start with you on this one. This is writing on the wall. We knew it was gonna happen. We just don't know when it will happen. Right from the first day that he was employed, we knew it was gonna happen.
You can say that. I probably speak with less, a little less sentiments than maybe Olayinka and Olawale would. I'm really not of the opinion that a coach should be perennially tied to a specific football club because, I mean, they are human beings and their jobs are probably the most volatile jobs. We know that there are only two types of coaches in this world. The coaches that have the jobs, no, or rather, the coaches that have been sacked and coaches that are waiting to be sacked. You know? Yeah. So Benitez came in with a lot of baggages as someone who does not also care. He shares the same sentiment as I do. Let's not forget he coached Chelsea after coaching Liverpool and he went to the blue side of Merseyside. So it lets you know that that man is thinking about his pockets as well. But the performances on the pitch of play tells the true story. I don't think all the players bought into it, especially letting someone who had the respect of the dressing room in James Rodriguez go. Lucas Digne just recently signed, I think, for, I don't know if it's Sevilla or Newcastle. So he's used to disrupting the camaraderie that players have while the results don't tell the same story. The English Football League is very, very fast-paced and very volatile. The owners they're not as patient as Italy would may give you until the end of the season. Coming back to what you were saying, I think Benitez brought all this on himself because he chooses the players that play on the field of play. He's the one that stays with them week in, week out, determining who should play or who shouldn't play. And what has happened now is that he has ruined the opportunity to coach again in England. I think right now the only English job he will probably get will be jobs of teams that are directly battling for survival. Yes, but directly battling for survival. He may go back to Newcastle. I'm not saying he will. Go back to Newcastle. I think he was there before. Yeah. But for now, I think his career in England is over as a coach. He can do well and become a studio pundit like all the other famous guys we have. It's still good money for him. But I think Benitez brought all this on himself, not really because of the fact that he betrayed one club, but really because he could not command that.
Kachi, honestly, I'm not about betrayal. Trust me. What I'm about is protecting yourself. If I'm not wanted somewhere, like I go to Olawale's house now, and Olawale doesn't want me to be there. Come on, man. I'm not going to stay.
How many coaches have you seen throw in the towel without being pushed out? Name one. I can't think of one. The last few weeks of Jose Mourinho's second stint in Chelsea, we knew they had. In fact, Mourinho should have gone 4 weeks before his famous interview that ultimately led to his sacking. Coaches will not go because they want to be pushed out so they can get the severance money.
Yeah.
If you lead by yourself,
what I'm saying here is, you are being presented to a club on the first day, and the fans booed you. They booed you. They were saying they don't want you.
He had the chance
to go to Real Betis. He had the chance to go to Real Sociedad, but he still chose that Everton.
Have you seen the rate of the British fans?
Guys, sentiments apart, in the last 9 years, Benitez has been at 5 different clubs. Last 9 years. He shows he doesn't have a philosophy again.
I think we need to calm down.
Do you know why he was before coming to Everton?
China.
He was in a Chinese club.
Yeah,
the Alliance Professional. I mean, obviously, he wasn't up to date on modern football. And
He was lucky. I will tell you, he was lucky. And I will start from the second round. I will start from the second round. If not because of that 94th Steven Gerrard shot against Olympiacos, they will not even get to the quarterfinals.
That was the group stage. That was the group stage.
Group stage, yeah.
That was the last group match.
They will not even get out of the group stage in the first instance.
Wait.
Never a good coach, Lali.
I don't think I will buy the idea that Rafael Benitez is not a good coach. I think we can come back to that.
My argument is very simple.
If you could win two La Liga titles,
yeah,
in a country whereby your chance of winning title, if you are not coaching Barcelona or Real Madrid,
20 years ago,
Barcelona was,
Barcelona was in crisis. Forget excuse. Which crisis? They won the league in 2000. Barcelona won the league in 2000.
Yeah.
They were in crisis. Real Madrid won the Champions League. Wait now. Real Madrid won the Champions League.
Barca was
wait,
in crisis,
please wait. 2001, Real Madrid was in the semi-final of the Champions League.
Yeah.
And they were in crisis. 2002.
I'm not talking about Real Madrid.
Wait now. When 2002, when he won the league,
yeah.
Real Madrid won the Champions League.
Yeah.
But
that's 20 years ago. Wait. Now. Isn't it 20 years ago?
You said he was not a good coach.
He's no longer a good coach.
I think the problem with Rafa Benitez has been probably a matter of choices, making probably the wrong choices. I think he made some choices that he shouldn't have made. They were probably rookie mistakes. Wait now.
Yeah.
But are you going to analyze this on your own? I was just...
Olawale, this guy destroyed it. I'm glad.
Olawale, go on.
I think taking over that Jose Mourinho's job at Inter Milan, he was actually destined to fail. Yeah, I think that one was actually there was already the writing's on the wall. I think it's a matter of him making the wrong choices. I think this season, for me, it is more of incompetence on the part of the Everton owners. Number one, if you are sacking Benitez today, you sack all the other people behind the scene who I think were not on the same page with Benitez some couple of weeks ago. Now you are sacking Benitez. So reflect to him. Everton has been one of the few teams that I think injuries have not been fair to this season, looking at their core. Richarlison has not been available for major part of the season. I'm not sure he has started up to 5 games this season.
Okay.
Dominic Calvert-Lewin just came back from injury.
Yeah.
The midfield has been in and out. Allen has been available at times, not available there. So it's been a lot of in and out. He has not had a stable squad to really, to be able to, let me say, at least build on.
This is the guy that plays 63 games with different teams. Continue.
I just feel like he has been a bit of a victim of circumstances in Everton. I think the board are just responding to the fact that the fans probably didn't like him from the onset. Because if you look at their performance within the first 5-6 games, it wasn't that terrible. It wasn't that bad.
It wasn't that bad. They were doing well. Playing very well. Andrew Stanswell playing very well.
You don't have to say anything because he made you guys relevant when you were not relevant.
Oh, wow.
You would have forgotten Liverpool.
News are realized.
Give him a bit of respect.
That guy played more than 93 games with different players.
He was the guy that bought the center.
He bought Voroni. Come on, man. Voroni, you remember Voroni with Liverpool to a laughing stock.
No, he didn't turn Liverpool to a laughing stock. Let us get it right. Where was Liverpool when he took over?
But he did very well when he bought Fernando Torres. Let's give him credit for that.
They could have won 2009 Premier League. It was that close.
Yeah, it was
that Arsenal game that ended 4-4.
did not happen.
It could have been, I think they ended like 4 points behind United. So
That's true. They did perfectly well.
I just wanted to add one more thing. Nika would say that Benitez seemed to be able to harness the groundwork done by other people. That 2005 Champions League winning team was the foundation of Gerard Houllier, who set up that team for success, gave Steven G his debut and all that. Yeah. But I don't think he's a good judgment or a good judge, rather, of innate talent. Yes, he got Steven Fernando Torres right. That's but best. How many other successful grass to grace
going back to that 2000. I think let us go back to that. Wait now. We need to go back. I think probably 2002, 3, 4, 5 is a bit far away. I think we are getting some things wrong. When the peak of the Gerard Houllier team was when they won UEFA Cup, Carling Cup,
FA Cup
in 2001.
Yeah.
2002, they finished second behind Arsenal.
Yeah.
Now, 2003, the decline started again. 2004, they couldn't.
I think they won the FA Cup in 2002, if I'm not mistaken.
Arsenal won the FA Cup in 2002.
Against Chelsea.
Arsenal won FA Cup in 2002. They won 2003.
Okay.
And United won 2004. So what I'm saying was this: the Gerard Houllier team was already declined, as in was they've reached their peak. They were already coming down. It wasn't like it was a promising team. It was like a team Pep Guardiola took over from all these things. So
okay.
He worked for his success. I will not deny him that. Like I said, you can't win two La Liga titles, and I will not come here and rubbish you are a terrible coach.
He won a
Champions League title.
I don't know if you remember that Gerard shot that brought you guys out of the group stage.
I remember. Against Olympiacos, right?
Olympiacos. Yeah, I can't
remember. It was a cracker.
It was a good cracker. And that guy went to Olali. That guy went to Inter Milan and destroyed Inter Milan after Inter Milan won treble. Went to Real Madrid, destroyed Real Madrid after. Olali, I want to stay with you on this one. I know you are very intelligent, but you can't help this guy. Trust me. Even if he's PR guy, you can't help him. He's a damaged goods. The level of African Nations Cup. I think I said this a couple of weeks ago that I don't really believe in African Nations Cup ever since it turns out that when you host, you can use external factors to win. I think it started sometime in I've forgotten exactly when. But I started giving up in 2000 after the Nigeria Cameroon
that was poor officiating. We can let that one fly.
We see it you know, and we see it the repeat of it in Tunisia, in Morocco, you know. And but do you think we've improved over time? We are back in this tournament and we're talking about referees blowing the final whistle at the 85th minute, at the 89th minute, you know. And we're having teams fighting at the end of
fighting happens a lot.
Yeah,
a lot. Like, people, like, please, you know, don't let,
especially no, in Copa America.
No, no, I'm
let,
not
let's about, focus.
I'm just saying. Have we seen improvements in the tournament?
Well, if you say improvement, like now, let me see. I think the problem with the African Nations Cup that for the referee thing. The team fighting, I don't think these things are new. We've seen a lot of strange things happening in football. We've seen referee awarding a penalty, pointing out to a penalty, Fulham versus Arsenal in 2004. And when Patrick Vieira and his gang harassed him, he changed his mind. He said in an interview that he changed his mind because of the Arsenal guys when they surrounded him. We've seen a lot of strange things. We can go around. We've seen a grand give additional three yellow cards to a single player. It's something strange. So it happens. So I don't think we should dwell on that. I think my own the major problem with the African Nations Cup is, number one, increasing the number of participating teams to 24 teams. You don't have to make everybody happy. Your country doesn't have to play in a competition before you have to watch it or enjoy it. So I think the 24 teams has actually watered down the competition in terms of quality. And this insistence on our tradition is our thing. We want to play in January is another thing. Now, when you increase, unlike when it was 16 teams, you play a maximum of 2 games a day. And you can start one around that 5 o'clock, irrespective of where you are, the country that is hosting.
Yeah.
You can start the first game around 5 o'clock when the weather is probably less ash.
Hot.
And play the other one by 8. But the challenge with a 24 nations team is you have to play 3 games per day. And one game have to start for TV rights, you have to probably start a game by 2 o'clock. And we all know playing in sub-Saharan Africa in January, 2 o'clock is too demanding, especially for players coming from Europe.
Yeah,
we need to reconsider that. I know it's not possible. It's not possible for CAF to go back from 24 back to 16. I just feel like it was a wrong decision. It's not making the competition watchable. At the same time, because of the time we just insist on playing the competition, it's now creating another problem. Because if you watch majority of the 2 o'clock matches, you know most of these guys are laboring a lot. And look at the Europe that we are trying to copy. Because I said it last week, whatever decision we make in Africa, it has to either we copy whatever they are doing in Europe.
They are doing Europe.
Or probably something FIFA is trying to do. Even Europe, European Nations Cup, that they've increased from 16 to 24, in as much as the standard is not that, but there is still a bit of water down in the standard too. Look at the European competition where you have England, Germany, Romania, Portugal in a group. A European Nations Cup where you have Holland, Denmark, France, Czech Republic in a group. As in, there is no margin for error. Right from the group stage, we've seen all action. Unlike now, you have to play Moldova, you have to. So it's not helpful, but Europe can get away with it because the developments over there, you can't compare what we have in Africa. It's not really help. I can tell you for free. Nations Cup that was played in 2000, 2000, 2004,
much better than what we are seeing now. All right, perfect, Olali. Thank you very much for that. Kachi, you want to say something to that?
I actually share a lot of Lawale's sentiments, but I do think that from the second round of games, the quality has improved. Even if attendance has not. I think it's only the host nations games and the games involving the Nigeria Super Eagles that have attracted more than half of the stadium capacity. But I need to still give credit to those Minos. They've not come to count or just be among the numbers. Mm-hmm. We've seen shock results across the entire group stage. Equatorial Guinea doing one over Algeria, has now failed to match the 37-match unbeaten run that Italy had last year.
Oh, wow. Is that true? Algeria lost? Can't believe that.
I believe they did.
Hey, but don't start. What's this?
I'm asking an innocent question, Olali.
Actually, we'll send this guy back to isolation.
We'll definitely send him to go on 5 more days of isolation. So to come back to it, I think the quality is gradually improving, even though I agree that 24 teams was stretching it a bit. Even when we had 16 teams, there was always the opportunity for one or two minnows to make the numbers, which would have made for better entertainment. But even the big names have failed to impress. So we should not just put that only on the foot of, because we have small teams. The big names, Algeria has not impressed. Egypt labored to beat Guinea-Bissau, Cote d'Ivoire looks like it's just a bunch of individuals and not a team. Senegal is laboring to also win. So based on that, it tells me that the big boys are not pulling their weight and the small boys are not lying down.
Are not lying down. They're not being
let's see what happens.
Like Chelsea. Okay. Kashi, I'm going to stay with you before I go to Olainka. Kylian Mbappe, Haaland looks to be destined for Real Madrid right now. Erling Haaland came out in the middle of the week to say Dortmund are actually harassing him right now to make up his mind where he wants to go to. His transfer fee or his release fee is going to drop to as low as 80 million euros or pounds, if I'm not mistaken, in the summer. And of course, Mbappe, if he does not renew his contract, could actually go for free, which makes it juicier for Real Madrid if they do eventually go to Real Madrid. How totalizing would be the attack, given the astronomic progression that we've seen in Vinicius Junior, particularly?
Wow, it's going to be. I mean, Real Madrid has always been box office, either box office for the right reason or box office for the wrong reason. But they've always been box office because of the people. The fact, see, even without the money, players want to play for Madrid.
100%.
You know, these guys, they grow up dreaming to wear that all white of Real Madrid. Potentially adding Erling Haaland and Kylian Mbappe to that team would make that attack a world beater. However, Olaika mentioned this during our production call that they need to work out who will be servicing who with the ball, because you can have all those guys, and if they are not getting the ball to score, it will be a problem. We saw that with Kaká really, really struggling when he came in. Kaká really struggled then. But what this would mean would be the progressive demise of faithful servant Karim Benzema. Because right now, you definitely know that the future would be Vini Jr., Mbappe, Erling Haaland. I think that's the price that will ultimately happen. Whether it will happen immediately, I don't know. But back to your question, there will be a blockbuster team.
All right. I had a little bit of Paul Pogba in the middle, Camavinga and Casemiro embedded in the middle as well.
There you have it.
I don't forget there's still an Asensio and Lucas Vasquez as well.
That it will always be a must-watch TV.
Bring something to the day. Olainka, I'm going to come to you. We don't understand the rule again. I've said it over and over again. It feels like I'm a terrible person. I'm an AAH, but I'm not. Arsenal had player that went to the African Nations Cup. It's nobody's problem. They had Maitland Niles. They sent him on loan. Nobody forced them to. And now, just one person had COVID in Arsenal. But because they have injury worries, they have people at Nations Cup, they have guys they sent out on loan, they postponed the North London Derby. This is an abuse of the process. And I believe we've said this before. How long do we want to keep up with this if we don't have a defined rule for postponement of games? So if tomorrow now I decide to send 5 guys on loan and one person have COVID and some guys goes to Nations Cup or they are out injured and just one person have COVID, I can decide to seek for postponement of my game and I'll be granted. This is unbelievable. Olainka.
Thank you, Labour, for that. I mean, it's... When you look at this situation critically, you just cannot just understand what's going on. And the bulk of the blame, I would say, the 100% of the blame, I believe, or 95%, should be on the table of the FA. I mean, we've seen a lot of inconsistencies in the running of football in that country. When you look at their referees and the VAR issues, there's a lot of inconsistency. And the same seems to have crossed over. The same mentality, inconsistent mentality, seems to have crossed over when it comes to postponement of matches. I mean, this is the only league in the world where you see four matches being postponed for flimsy excuses. I mean, what's the concept of having a U team? What's the concept of having a feeder team? Why would I mean, what's the concept of having five substitutes and yet you end up postponing matches? I mean, they are going to shoot the FA, they are likely going to shoot themselves in the leg, in the leg, because it will come to a time, for example, when you have a lot of competitions between February and March, it will come to a time that you have no choice but to line up three matches in a week for some clubs. And that will even put more pressure on their players. I mean, I think they need to come to terms with the fact that they have set up a structure where you can actually make up for not having enough Team A players. You have your U team and you also have five substitutes. And I think they need to put their foot down. I'm talking about the FA, and ensure that matches go on as I went due. It's taking away the shine from the game. I mean, there are weekends like you just want to watch three quality matches. Before you know it, two of the grade A matches are postponed. It's taking away the shine. Fans are not happy. Club sides are not happy. I'm sure even television, the broadcasting people are not happy, because it just doesn't. It's mixing up everything. It's taking up a lot of time. So just to answer your question directly, I think that the FA, they need to go back to the drawing board. The earlier they do that, the better, and review matches that they should postpone. I mean, I don't even. I mean, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense.
All right,
so I think that going forward, they should even, I won't say they should entertain requests for matches to be postponed, but they should look at it realistically and make sure that the right thing is done.
All right, perfect. Kachi, you want to add something to that?
Quickly. Yes. Olaole, do you remember when the first news broke of Manchester United having four people in their camp tested positive for COVID?
Yeah.
And we argued this case on air, saying what the league should have done was to take a 8 to 10 day break, come out with a policy document that will ensure consistency.
Exactly.
What the league is paying the price for not making that decision now. Because every day, the reason they give for postponing games, there's not been the same reason. In all the postponement we've seen, we've not seen the same reason.
And the same Arsenal played against Liverpool a couple of days ago.
Exactly. So I think the league would shot themselves in the foot, rightly, like Olayinka said. This thing is coming back to bite them. What they should have taken, if they are taking the 1 week break, even the leagues that took Christmas breaks in Italy, in Spain, they've all resumed. No one would have known the difference. But there would have been a document written in black and white that would have guided decision.
If you have four players that have COVID, then if it's less than four.
That's why you have a youth league.
All right.
The youth leagues are playing.
No. Thank you very much for that. Olaole, we have a couple of minutes left. I'm coming to you now. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was with Manchester United. We had so much embarrassment with Manchester United. Looks like every time they take one step forward, they take two back. Now Rav Ragnick is here. He's the professor of the game pressing. We expected more from him. It takes time. At this point, should this be a long-time project whereby they do the same thing Arsenal did? Looking at Arteta, that you can do whatever, fail, but we want to see results, or we see changes within the next 3 years. Because it looks like all these things are not working right now. Because I can't see any difference. Rafa, whatever.
Well, couple of things. When the professor came in, first thing was the formation thing, which for sometimes in football, like I said, that's why I always refer back to good man Carlo Ancelotti. At times, your ability to adapt or figuring out information based on the kind of players you have matters a lot. I think the player struggles a lot with the 4-2-2-2 formation, which surprisingly, I was expecting somebody like Donny van de Beek to be introduced, because that formation requires like two playmakers. I didn't struggle fine. We all know that these players will struggle with the Genge pressing thing, high pressing game, because it demands a lot. You have to be very fit. It's not sustainable for 90 minutes. We saw it bad, this Crystal Palace game. It disappeared. Then if you have watched Ralf Rangnick press conference, most of the word that has probably comes out from his mouth is has always been control, 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 which United have demonstrated that they don't have at present. The Villa game yesterday, the second goal was as a result of high pressing. Fine. They won the ball at the opponent's half. And they made use of it effectively. But you will not win the ball back every time you press. What about when you have the ball to build from the back? You need to have control. He has laid emphasis on the word control, which United lack. Now. All the midfielders seems to... I don't think they have the intelligence to really... So I think it's a whole lot of problem with the team. There is a lot of mentality issue on part of the players. And like somebody rightly said, I read an article today, in as much as people believe Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is a good man manager, at the same time, he has lowered the standard for some of these players. They could easily get away with a lot of things. Rangnick said Marcia didn't want to be in the part of the squad yesterday. He came out on Instagram that is not true. Solskjaer won't probably have come out to say it like that. So I'm not sure. I'd rather believe the manager at this stage rather than believe this stage. I think the standard is so low at United right now that, like you rightly said, the board has to take a decision, and which has to be a long-term decision right now. I think they wanted Solskjaer to be a long-term solution. But unfortunately, Solskjaer was a wrong pick because of its limitations, which are just too many. Recruitment, tactics-wise. So for now, they have to stick whichever way. But my only concern is this man is going after 6 months. What happened thereafter? Are they going to pick somebody similar to him? Or are we going to see what happened after Baha that United went back to a Mourinho?
Or is he training someone for that role?
Okay. Yeah, they said there's going to be a consultancy role for him for two years. So if he's going to be behind the scene, expect him to probably influence who is going to succeed or influence the way. Because if he's not bringing somebody, if God is going to influence the person that's going to succeed him, how are we sure that the person coming in will probably buy into whatever is advising behind the scene? So United, they have to get it right at this stage.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much, Lale. We are pressed for time. We have just 2 minutes left. Wayne Rooney is doing wonders at Derby County. I thought we were going to talk about that, but we can't. Minus 21 points at the start of the season. But right now, it's just 8 points off safety, which is very, very incredible, if you ask me. Maybe United should be looking at him or Graham Potter for the job. You never can tell. Of course, we were supposed to talk about Chelsea and the City game. Tuchel Leban, they said he's playing an Aram football. For those who doesn't understand Arabic, Aram means forbidden. He's playing a forbidden football for a team of the capacity of Chelsea. They should not lay down like chickens for Manchester City, even at the Etihad Stadium. They played good football for just 15 minutes and City knew they were playing against a team. But for 75 minutes, Chelsea were there for the taking. Thanks to Kevin De Bruyne, wonderful goal. You can't fault him for that. Of course, Brighton and Hove played a 1-1 draw against Crystal Palace. Newcastle played a 1-1 draw against Watford as well. Wolverhampton Wanderers played a 3-1 win against Southampton with this young man, Adama Traore, eventually scoring a goal. He has not assisted or scored a goal in more than 18 months, if I'm not mistaken. Liverpool played a 3-0 win against Brentford. Chelsea were defeated 0-1 against City. Manchester, Norwich City defeated Everton 2-1. Aston Villa and Manchester United played a 2-2 draw. Welcome back. The Rabbit is back, and the Rabbit did pretty well. Leeds United defeated West Ham 3-2 in the Italian league. Juventus came back to win anyways, thanks to Dybala and McKean. I don't know if I get the pronunciation right.
American.
Yeah, 2-0 against Udinese. Lazio back to winning ways, 3-0. And of course, Roma 2-1, 1-0. I believe Inter Milan did play the barren draw against Atlanta. And in the African Nations Cup, Algeria lost. That's the wrap. That's the show, guys. We'll see you again next week. Thank you very much for being part of the program. My name is Laje Adebowale. Follow us on all our social media and have a wonderful sporting week. Bye, guys.